I can remember as a boy of maybe 8 or 9 years old asking Dad the question, do you ever hear God's voice? Because I heard Christians, even as a boy, saying around me all the time that they heard God speaking to them. So I said to him, have you ever heard God's voice? And he said, well, I'm not sure I've ever heard God's voice, but I think I've heard God speaking to me. I'm sure I've heard God speaking to me. I don't know if that's your experience as well. Have you ever pondered that question? Have you ever heard God speaking to you? That's a good question to ask if you're a Christian, isn't it? We claim that God speaks to us. God has been silent, it appears, even to the people of Israel for many years. It says at the start of that story from Samuel, the people had not heard the word of God very often. We know that God had been silent for 400 years before Jesus came. There had been no prophets, no word from God. The last time we know that God spoke out loud, the last time we know, there could be others, it was when Jesus, full of pride, when God, full of pride, looked at Jesus and said, "Here's my beloved son, listen to him." How do you know God's speaking to you? It's a good question. When I was a boy, and I must have pondered matters theological quite often, apparently, because we used to have cows, and you used to bring in, those of you who ever lived on a farm, you bring in the cows and you lock up the calves at night if they still have a calf, right? So the calf doesn't drink all the milk, and then in the morning you milk the cow, and then the calf goes off with the cow for the rest of the day. You're not really interested in that. It doesn't matter a great deal for this story. But I used to bring the cows in, see, and just riding my horse, and as you do. And I can remember this, it's pitching in my mind. I say, God, if you're real, just move the branch of that tree. Right? Just tell me, like, I want to know. Just that you're there. Send me a message. I need a sign. Show me something. And then the next tree. All right. Not that one. Maybe this one. Maybe it had moved. I'm not sure. So our Christian experience, I think, in terms of listening to God can be hard. You know, I've told this joke before, but the guy who's late for an appointment and he's desperately looking for a car park, and he's driving around and he says, God, please give me a car park. Please give me a car park. I'll go to church every Sunday. Then there's a car park in front of him. He said, don't worry, God, I found one. Was it God? How do we know? There's a great story of one of the great prophets of the Old Testament. His name was Elijah, and you would have heard his name, I'm sure. He was called Elijah the Tishbite, which is, we think, some obscure place in Gilead. His story is really interwoven with that of one of the bad kings of Israel, a king called Ahab. And time again, Elijah confronts Ahab, who is an evil, well, a bad king. I don't know if he's evil, but he was, probably. He was a bad guy. And Elijah was a zealous and extraordinary prophet. And one of the really interesting things about this Elijah story, which is given one of the most thorough tellings, is really that this is when writing was invented, as opposed to hieroglyphics, which were characters that represented words. This was when writing of phonics, as it's called, of sounds, was actually invented at the time of Elijah. And we have this fantastic and kind of accurate story. We get these glimpses of him as a very real person. Now, the writing, funnily enough, was invented by the Phoenicians. And these were the people who were actually the enemies of Israel. And in fact, Jezebel, who was Ahab, the bad king's wife, was a Phoenician. All right? So she'd married Ahab, and at that time, Ahab's father, Omri, had been a very successful king. He'd conquered lots of lands. And in fact, under Omri, the kingdom of Israel was about as big as it would ever be. The Bible hardly talks about him, though, because he was a bad guy too. So, but Ahab was his son, and Ahab had married this Jezebel, Phoenician princess, and she was a devout worshipper of the gods of Canaan, particularly the god of Baal and his consort Asherah. So she did all sorts of things. She basically brought this worship, and they put up Asherah poles, which was, and Asherah was a fertility goddess, and all sorts of things. And I was trying to imagine what would it be like. I can't really imagine a queen coming in and challenging our culture. I don't know, maybe if our new prime minister was a prime minister's wife, maybe was an American, and demanded that we give up rugby league, and we give up cricket, and all our cricket grounds became baseball stadiums, and Anzac Day wasn't to be celebrated anymore, and I don't know, whatever other great traditions Australians have, were to be no more. But she certainly challenged the Israel culture. And so Elijah was in constant conflict with them. Now, he was a great prophet, and he was one of what we call, he wasn't what we call a writing prophet. So, that, you know, there's two types of prophets in the Old Testament, don't you? So there's people like Isaiah and Jeremiah who write really long books, and then there's someone like Elijah. And someone wrote down his story, but he didn't write down directly prophecies. So he was a kind of extraordinary guy, Elijah, this great and famous prophet. In fact, whenever anybody for centuries to come would talk about a prophet, they'd just say Elijah. And when they said Elijah, you know, they were talking about a great prophet. That's what the two things were synonymous. And people asked if Jesus was the new Elijah, right? It was to be this great man of Israel. And Elijah would eventually outlive Ahab, but he would not outlive Ahab's wife, Jezebel. And he was a man of extraordinary miracles, and it seemed that God listened to Elijah. There's this great story where he's one of the kings, the king after Ahab, is not well, and he's worried that he's going to die. So he doesn't send for Elijah. He sends for some pagan prophet. And Elijah sees the guy, the messenger, going to the pagan prophet. He says, turn around, I'll give you the message for your king. He's going to die. And so the king, who's really worried about his health, is that enough? So he sends out a captain and 50 soldiers to go and get Elijah. When they come to get Elijah, Elijah says, if I'm not speaking the word of God, if I am speaking the word of God, you're all going to die by fire. They all get killed. It's a gruesome story, right? The king is incensed by this. He sends out another captain and another 50 soldiers to go and get Elijah and bring him in. Elijah says, if I'm not speaking the truth, you're going to die by fire. And they all died. The king, a slow learner, got another captain, and he said, go out and get Elijah. This is when it's good to come third, right? When you learn from the mistakes of your predecessors. This guy crawls on hands and knees to Elijah and says, think of my life. Think of my life. Please spare me. Please, please come and see the king. And Elijah does. It was great to be a captain in the Old Testament times. I'm so thankful I'm a major. One of the other famous stories about Elijah is that he was... the story with the prophet Baal, right? So there's this conflict between the surrounding culture and the worship of God. And you might remember this story from Sunday school. You know, the one where Elijah, the prophets are praying because they're in drought, right? And they're praying and they're praying and they're praying. And Elijah comes to them on his own with all these prophets, and he rebuilds the altar, an altar of God. And he surrounds it with water and drenches the offering in water, and he says, God, you are real. I need you to show me a sign. And he gets an answer, unlike me with my trees. And fire consumes the offering. And then Elijah says to Ahab, look, see the cloud that's coming. And eventually it does. And the rain and the storm comes. And Elijah runs back to the capital. So this really famous story. But what's really interesting after that is what Elijah does next. Because it's completely unexpected. See, he goes to Jezebel, and she basically says, on my life, I will destroy you for what you have done to these prophets of Baal. I will destroy you. And Elijah, the man who has just seen God's power at work, is afraid. He's afraid. And he runs away. Afraid, and he runs away. And he runs out into the wilderness. And he's just exhausted. He's terrified by Jezebel, and he's just exhausted. And the angels of God care for him, and they bring him food. And then they say, eat even more food, because you need to go on a journey. And so Elijah goes on a journey, and he goes to a place called Mount Horeb. Now, we've actually heard that name already today. Do you remember when we heard it today? Which Bible story? It was Moses and the burning bush. Was it Mount Horeb? And Mount Horeb is where eventually Moses will receive the Ten Commandments. So Elijah goes to this holy place, and God leads him there. And he's defeated, and he's alone, and he's hiding in a cave on the mountain of God. And he feels desperate. The religions, the world around him seems so powerful that even he, a man of God, cannot imagine a way out. The forces around him, that surround him, are so powerful that he cannot imagine a way out. He felt so alone. Even though there'd been this demonstration of God's power, it wasn't enough. The people would still not follow God. He could see ahead that these pagan gods, the gods of Baal and Asherah, were still influencing the people of God. And it wasn't so much that they'd given up on God. It's a challenge that the people of God have faced through every century. It's that they would add to God. They wouldn't completely trust God, having a bet both ways, you see. Saying that they relied on God, but actually relying on all sorts of other things, and allowing the surrounding culture to impact their understanding of God. And it was their problem. It's really our problem too. It's not that we give up on God, it's that we add too much else in, you see. A problem is not one of belief. It's a problem of a distortion or an adding to of God. So it's not atheism that challenges us. It's actually a polytheism in our world and in our hearts, worshipping other gods as well. And so I think we can imagine the way Elijah's feeling here. He is a good guy, right? He's a good guy, and he's known God, and he's known God's work in his life. He's done the right thing. And even so, he seemed overwhelmed by the polytheism around him. And perhaps he felt, it just doesn't matter. No matter what I do, it doesn't matter. It's all for nothing. And so somehow Elijah forgets God's miracles, he forgets God's power, he forgets God's helper, and he retreats into what sounds like depression. He's overwhelmed by the magnitude of the task. He's overwhelmed by the lack of progress. And there he sits, like Moses, on the mountain. Now, this story is actually found in 1 Kings 19. And if you know this story, you'll know what happens next. You know that God appears in multiple ways to Elijah. God says to him, go out and stand on the mountains in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake there came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came... And see, when I'd first written this sermon, I thought it was a still small voice. But it's not. It's not a still small voice. The actual translation of the Hebrew is the sound of fine silence. The sound of sheer silence. That's what we call an oxymoron, isn't it? Do you remember that? So where two things are side by side that seemingly don't go together, the sound of silence. How can silence have a sound? You remember that? When you say something is seriously funny, that's an oxymoron. I'll give you an exact estimate, or that's a genuine imitation. All right? That's an oxymoron. And here we have one, the sound of fine or sheer silence. And it's in the silence that Elijah hears God. It's in that moment of silence that Elijah hears God. I think that in our lives there are moments of clarity in the presence of God. And I don't know that we have them all the time. I suspect we don't. I think we have these moments when we're confronted with our deepest need in the presence of God. And we hear God in the sounds of fine silence when our thoughts and our words finally stop. When we're confronted with our deepest need in the presence of God. You see, just before all those demonstrations of God's power, Elijah's plea was still the same. He was saying, it's not working, Lord. It's all failed. The people are not listening. Nothing's changing. Everything's going wrong. Basically, God says to Elijah, stop worrying about outside your control and just listen. Is that what gets between us and God? Maybe the listening. Is the other voices in our head, our worries, our concerns, our worries about the world, our worries about our future, our worries about what people will think? Sharon and I have just been up to Katoomba for the Officers Fellowship, and that's one of the reasons we're worried, because it was someone at Katoomba School was diagnosed with the coronavirus. And there was a couple of hundred people there at this conference. And as we were going out one morning, I said to Sharon, how does my ensemble look? And she said, why do you care? And I thought, I just do. I want to know that I look smart. It was a good question. Why did I care? What was the image I was projecting, right? What did I want people to see? Why was I worried about what people saw? Right? Did it really matter that my shirt matched my new jeans? I can't tell you, see? That's why I have to ask people. Why did I care about what people said? What is that? Why do we worry about so much that's external to us? That's beyond our control, right? Why do we spend so much energy worrying and wondering about things that are beyond our control? Allowing that noise to get in our heads about how people see us or judge us, what they'll say about us. We worry about the road ahead. We worry about the road behind. God just says, listen. Listen. And then God spoke to Elijah. And he gave him some instructions. He said, I want you to go and I want you to do three things. That's all. Three simple things. Anoint this guy. Anoint this guy. Off you go. One of them was Elisha, by the way, his successor. The tasks that God gave him were actually small. Because what would happen in the nations was up to God, right? God would look after that. God said, listen. Listen, hear the silence. Listen in the silence. Look for the moment when God will speak to us. Listen to find out what God says to us. God's presence, the bit that impacts us, does not really lie in demonstrations of power, but in the quiet stillness of the eternal presence, in simple actions, in our walk with God. God reminds us of eternity. And God reminded Elijah that God was with him. That Elijah was not alone, never alone, and we are not alone. God reminded him through those simple actions that actually, Elijah, there are other people. You are not on your own. Anoint him. Go and do. You see, our living God speaks to us at our point of need in surprising and simple ways. We just need to listen. Can we be sure that it is God? Does the tree branch when we ask the tree branch move when we ask it to? When is an answer to prayer an answer to prayer? Did God provide the parking spot? I think the only way we find out is by listening. All right, that's the only way we find out. Our living God speaks to us at our point of need in surprising and often simple ways. We serve a living God, a caring God. What's lovely in this story is there's no anger from God towards Elijah. He's not rebuked. The whole way through this story, in what sounds like depression, God feeds him. God sustains him and God leads him. And when Elijah's ready, God says, "Listen to me." God does that still to us, his people. He provides for us, he leads for us, and he speaks into our hearts. And then he says, "Get up and get going. I'm with you." As individuals and as a church, I think we desperately need these moments of clarity where we listen to God to speak in the silence. We're able to still our own minds, still our hearts, and hear from God. And what is it? What is the voice in our head that stops us? What is the worry or the concern? What is the stress that stops us listening to God? Our living God speaks to us at our point of need in surprising and simple ways. He always has and he always will. So I want us to respond to God. And we're not going to sing. All right? We're going to sit in silence. And silence for us is awkward. We are so used to filling it. Well, I am. I panic when there's silence, particularly in worship. Something that 4 seconds is all you've got, by the way, before people start lifting their heads, looking around, wondering what's coming next. So we're going to listen for more than 4 seconds. And you might hear noises. You might hear the sound of the person next to you. You might hear them breathing. Perhaps pray for them. You might hear the air conditioning. You might hear the traffic outside. Perhaps they'll prompt you to prayer. As we listen in silence, just ask God to speak to you. So let's be brave enough to sit in silence. It won't be too long, all right? It'll only be a minute or two. Be brave enough to listen to God right now.